Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office. And Zorba, that theme music we're hearing right now, you know, that Seinfeld-esque synthesizer bass 90s drum machine ditty? That one we're hearing, listeners are hearing that right now. Is that the waiting room for your virtual doctor's office?
That's
the waiting room music?
You got it. You always have to have that music.
Yeah, people ask sometimes, are you ever going to upgrade the theme song?
Never.
Answer is never.
Never.
We love this theme song.
That's right.
It's back in style. It's so old, it's back in style like baggy jeans. We'll talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails, and a few voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics today, Zorba.
We're going to talk about multivitamins. We've done this over and over again. There's some new data. Should you take it? Shouldn't you take it? We'll go back and forth. Talk about the newest study on multivitamins and vaping. It is exploding among people as something that they will chronically do. And we have to talk about vaping, whether or not it really is okay, not okay, and what the challenges are right now, because it is exploding in use.
All right. And what's our special recipe today?
Pizza, but it's watermelon pizza. Have you ever had watermelon pizza?
I've never tried this.
Have you had watermelon?
Sure.
Have you had pizza?
I think so.
But you think so, right?
I love pizza.
Watermelon pizza. Really good recipe. Very interesting. Wonderful to use any time of year, especially this time of year.
All right. To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us now from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, first, thanks for taking my call. I am a 76-year-old male. Mm-hmm. I have, for the last 3 years, I have had peripheral neuropathy in my feet.
Okay.
It's painful and annoying. But during the day, I can pretty much ignore it because I'm doing other things and my focus is elsewhere. But when I lie down and try to go to sleep, that's where the problem arises, because it's difficult to fall asleep when you're experiencing pain in your feet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I did consult with my doctor. Mm-hmm. He advised me to see a podiatrist, which I did, and a neurologist.
Your doc did some tests, tested you for diabetes. Do you have diabetes?
He does test me regularly when I go in, you know, once a year for, my annual physical.
Sure.
And part of that, you know, is that they test for
diabetes. How long have you had peripheral neuropathy? When did it start?
About 3 years.
So about 3 years ago. No, the reason I ask is peripheral neuropathy, which is really kind of painful. Feet, you know, your feet bother you and your legs. What kind of symptoms do you have at night when you're going to sleep?
It's not exactly what I would call sharp, excruciating pain.
Mm-hmm.
But it's you know, tingling.
Tingling? Okay.
Sort of borderline sharp pain, just in my feet, not in my legs.
Okay, so in your feet. Now, the reason why I mentioned diabetes is that is the most common cause of peripheral neuropathy, is diabetes. And if you're having blood sugar.
My doctor mentioned that when I first went to see him about the problem.
Yeah, so, I mean, we sometimes do some tests, you know, we often do tests. We test for diabetes. Sometimes there's some, I don't remember exactly what it is, besides vitamin B12 deficiency can also give you a peripheral neuropathy. So you want to make sure you've gotten all the proper tests. That's first of all. B12, blood sugar, and when I look at peripheral neuropathy, I often go to something called UpToDate, which is a reference we look at to see what other blood tests I may look at. Okay, so for the moment, let's assume your doctor did that. I'm not sure if they did or didn't. So when you get
when I went to the neurologist, he did some
other tests.
Pretty intensive.
Okay, good. You went to the neurologist. Great. So your doctor recommended you see a podiatrist for pain control, or why exactly?
He put me on something called gabapentin.
Uh huh. Okay. good drug.
And then when I saw the neurologist, because the gabapentin really wasn't doing much, he put me on something called amitriptyline.
Amitriptyline, okay, which is an antidepressant in small doses because that can help. Uh-huh. Did those do anything?
Which also, well, it gave me really bad dry mouth, so I just kind of...
Yeah, it's a side effect of it, right.
Yeah.
Did it help the peripheral neuropathy, by the way?
Not that I noticed.
Well, you're the only one to notice. It's yours.
Right.
Nobody else would notice it. Let me assure you. Nobody else notices your peripheral neuropathy. You're the only one.
So I am now at the point of considering acupuncture, and I was wondering what your thoughts on that might be.
Well, first of all, I would do, if you've got peripheral neuropathy and it bothers you, I would try everything, standard medicine and medicine that is complementary and alternative medicine. So a few rounds of acupuncture might help. I certainly would consider trying that and see if that helps. There also are a number of physical therapists in town do something called dry needling, which is kind of like acupuncture. It's different. It's physical therapy attempt to once again look at different ways of affecting the subcutaneous tissue, which is the tissue under the skin that can be part of this, and try to get the nerves to do different things. I'm going to go back on the drugs for just a moment. So they're the anti-seizure drugs, gabapentin, pregabalin, another drug called Tegretol. And these drugs can affect peripheral neuropathy. And one of the things you want to look at is you want to try dosing of it. So if you haven't gone to the maximal doses of the drug at bedtime, you may want to try that because that's the time that bothers you. And you want to take it kind of an hour before you go to sleep or more. You want it to be in your system before you get into bed because that's usually, you know, when you're kind of calming down, that's when you tend to notice these things. So the timing is important and the dosing. And if one doesn't work, I would try the second one or the third one. So there's gabapentin, pregabalin. Those are the two big ones. And I would try different dosing. Now, the other option, for instance, for amitriptyline, may work or not work by itself. There's another drug in that class, nortriptyline. Similar, doesn't cause as much of a dry mouth. I would go to the lowest dose, like 10 milligrams, see if that works, and see if that works in combination with the gabapentin. If one doesn't work, two might work. Because what you want to do is you want to get those nerves to kind of settle down before you go to sleep. And it's right. Like a lot of other things. We notice stuff when we're trying to go to sleep. Like all of a sudden we'll notice a car going down the street and it doesn't bother us if we're watching Seinfeld on TV. If you're watching reruns, you know, or something. So I had to get in my Seinfeld.
Good callback.
Yeah, thanks. Good callback. So you may not have gone through all those differences with the drugs. That's one thing. The next thing is I like the idea of acupuncture. That may work. You may also try a counter-irritant on your feet. You know, Bengay is a counter-irritant, but there are a number of other counter-irritants whereby you put things on your feet that actually produce a different sensation, and that sensation blocks the sensation of the peripheral neuropathy when you're trying to go to sleep. So sometimes Bengay works, literally, because it's a counter-irritant or other things. But those are the things I would try. I definitely would try. I wouldn't give up on this at all. And it sounds like you've had the workup. That's important. You've seen the neurologist. You've had the workup.
Right.
I would say half, clearly half, if not more than half, peripheral neuropathy. We don't know what it's caused by. So we blame it on everything from cardiovascular disease to other issues. And the fact is we don't really know what causes it. So thanks for sharing that.
Well, thanks so much. Those are some good practical advice that I haven't heard so far.
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling. That's what we try to do, practical advice, except when Carl comes in and gives us humor. Then he gives us
every
humorous
once in a while
advice. Thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's do our healthy living topic discussion of the day. The first one, actually, because we always have two of them. Multivitamins. Over the years, it seems like, are they good? Are they worthless? What's the newest research right
well,
now?
Well, you know, it changes. It changes.
It does. Why?
It's like one study, next study,
yeah.
One study.
It's hard to
so
keep
first
up.
Of all, if multivitamins do anything, it's not much.
Do you take one? Or two?
No, I don't take one.
Did you use
to? So I go back and forth. But
see,
I mean, it doesn't do much. But let me go to the downside of the whole thing. Often people take a multivitamin thinking that they don't have to eat right.
Mm.
In other words, that That, beyond a doubt, is part of the issue of why I'm generally against multivitamins. People say, well, I really don't eat right, so I take a multivitamin. No, guys, you got to eat right. Mm-hmm. That's a variety of fruits and vegetables with a variety of color. The better the color, the more vitamins and phytonutrients we have in there. And I think that's a big issue. The second issue is we get multivitamins through things like white bread. White bread is made with enriched flour. And in fact, that's the way they got rid of, basically in the 20s, got rid of vitamin deficiencies, adding vitamin D to milk and then adding a whole bunch of B vitamins to flour. Because people like bread. Have you noticed that?
Oh, my kids love bread.
And they get their vitamins through bread. So we're actually getting multivitamins through enriched flour. That's, quote, enriched flour is all about. And once we started putting folic acid in enriched flours, we substantially reduced the risk of spina bifida, which was a neurological problem that occurred in babies when they were born because it had folic acid had to be on board between the first 2 to 4 weeks of pregnancy. That's when basically we found there was an issue. So I want to put that to the side. Now, does it do anything? Well, this study shows no. Doesn't do anything. 400,000 healthy adults followed for 20 years found that it doesn't do anything at all. People are at risk for vitamin deficiency diseases such as chronic kidney disease, people who don't absorb vitamins because they have bariatric surgery or they have GI issues, may not absorb vitamin B12. That's a totally different issue. Pregnant mothers need multivitamins. But according to this particular study, it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't improve. Taking a multivitamin doesn't make your brain smarter. It doesn't reduce your risk of cognitive decline. Doesn't reduce your risk of macular degeneration, doesn't seem to do anything, doesn't seem to make you live longer. Now, what does that mean? Well, what do you think a year of multivitamins would cost? First of all, they are regulated by the feds.
Okay.
Some things are not regulated by the feds. Generally, things that are, things complementary and alternative things, supplements, are generally not regulated by the feds. But if it says multivitamin USP, it meant the U.S. pharmacopoeia, it means it gets absorbed in there. What do you think a year of multivitamins cost? Just take a guess.
Couple hundred dollars a year?
A generic multivitamin probably costs you $25 a year for supply. Yes.
Wait, okay.
Obviously, you're taking very expensive multivitamins.
I got to really look at those price tags.
Do you take multivitamins or not?
I take like a Vita gummy,
If you take a Vita gummy at a big box store, it's roughly, it's probably about 10 bucks for a 3-month supply. That's what they are. I looked it up just recently. I think 100 pills for like 10 bucks.
All right, I'm clearly way off here. Maybe I need less multivitamins.
How much is a gallon of milk?
I don't drink milk. Kids barely drink milk either, so we don't buy milk.
How much
that
is
often.
A loaf of bread?
It depends on the bread. You can get a $1 loaf of bread of like, white bread, you can get like a $7 locally.
Right. That's right. Source.
Yeah, local.
Who does the shopping in your house? I'm just doing it aside. You both do.
Yeah.
So there's certain things you know the price of when you're looking at stuff. When you're looking at certain protein, you know the prices. So you can buy an expensive multivitamin or you can buy an inexpensive multivitamin. So number one, if you're going to take a multivitamin, go inexpensive. If it says USP on the label, then that means it meets a certain criteria. And it's just as good if it has $4 signs and has a very friendly name on it.
I need to recheck my price tags on my vitamins.
You better check you better check. But anyway, very inexpensive. So if you want to take a multivitamin for $20 or $25 a year, you can waste your money a lot of ways for $25. You can go go out to a movie and a show and get a pizza. You're going to spend more than that, right?
Right.
In today's dollars.
A lot more.
So you could take it. But right now, the data shows it's not going to do squat. But if it makes you feel better, do it.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's take a voicemail now. This is a listener from the state of California.
I'm taking 10 milligrams of a statin, which was prescribed to me about a year ago. And things have been going okay. And it was to reduce the low density lipoprotein. I started when I drank alcohol, when I had 2 drinks in less than an hour, I got violently ill. And I've noticed when I drink alcohol, I have to really be careful and limit myself to no more than 1 drink. Is that related to the statin or is that my age? I just turned 60, but I've never, ever had a problem with alcohol. Thank you.
Well, first of all, it may be your age. That's exactly it. I mean, you know, as we get older, we tend to tolerate inebriants differently than we did when we were younger, no matter what the inebriant is. Mm-hmm. And for many people, instead of causing euphoria, they can cause dysphoria, which is an uncomfortable feeling. I don't know if that's related to the alcohol. I haven't read anything about anything in any good scientific critique that says that alcohol and statins are really, you know, really bothersome. Taking the statin at bedtime can make a difference. So if you're taking it during the day, because some statins can be taken during the day and some can be taken at bedtime. And if you take it at bedtime, it may not affect you as much, especially I'm assuming you're drinking in the evening. You're not drinking in the morning. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're drinking in the morning, you're on the beach, it may not make any difference. It may not make any difference at all. But I probably say it's more of an age-related thing. The other thing is we know, you know, there's back and forth about how much alcohol is okay. And recently, there's been some information that implies that no alcohol is actually the healthiest thing for you. I don't agree completely with that literature, but one drink a day for women appears to be okay, and two drinks appears to be something that may take care of a higher risk. So sticking to that one drink a day may also be the right thing to do.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, let's hear from your favorite hand raisers and eager beavers.
Let me guess. The Grammar Police.
That's good. Saying, like, we got to re-record this jingle with you singing. All right. Actually, Zorba, this one comes from a highly active division of the Grammar Police that we've yet to hear from on the show, which
is
kind of amazing.
Really? Over all these years?
All these years, we've not heard from. This is from the Sweat Police. Have you heard of the Sweat?
No, not
the
at
Sweat
all.
Police?
Not at all. No? They've been in the background.
Yeah, they're always just in working the background. Right. So this is an email from an anonymous listener.
Anonymous.
Okay. Anonymous. And for this segment, let's let an actual officer of the Sweat Police read this one.
Zorba, I remember you saying that sweating had no detox value, as it was the same as serum. This 2011 article from the National Institutes of Health disagrees, and I quote, "Many toxic elements appear to be preferentially excreted through sweat, presumably stored in tissues. Some toxic elements readily identified in the perspiration of some participants were found in their serum. Induced sweating appears to be a potential method for elimination of many toxic elements from the human body.
Induce that sweat.
Biomonitoring for toxic elements through blood and/or urine testing may underestimate the total body burden of such toxicants."
Wait, I've got a question.
That's an officer of the Sweat Police.
That's an officer of the Sweat Police.
Yeah, they're very serious.
Am I really supposed to believe that? That's the officer of the Sweat Police?
Well, that was the email from the Sweat Police.
That was the email.
As read by.
You mean that as read by.
Yeah.
With
some voice-changing technology going on.
That's exactly.
With a Keith Sweat song in the
background.
Well,
let's look at sweating. Okay. Let's look at what, you know, there are certain, not certain, in many cultures, sweating is considered to be healthy. How about Sweden, Norway, Denmark, you know, Finland, the Scandinavian countries often say we sweat, we feel better, we go in there and we get rid of toxins.
All those saunas.
Whatever those toxins are. You know, so first of all, what do we measure? Well, we measure things that we know about, right? So we're looking at sweat, we're looking at the salt that goes out in sweat and other things. But there may be other things that sweat is good for that we don't measure because we don't know it's something we're supposed to be measuring. Hmm. So I'll go back. I'll pull back a little bit on that. Sweating to get rid of toxins is yet an unknown scientifically, but from a cultural point of view, go for it.
All right. Do you have an issue with something Zorba said on the show? Don't sweat it. Just send us a sweaty, sensual R&B track, or just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right, we have a watermelon pizza recipe coming up, along with more of your calls, more emails, and more voicemails, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio in Madison, Wisconsin with Dr. Zorba. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba's sitting right across the desk from me. And what are you wearing, Zorba? You are wearing a cool outfit again. You're always wearing a great outfit.
I am
outfit.
Wearing cool. So green. Today is Green Day.
So oh, yeah, green day. So he's got a Green River, green Utah day. Vintage t-shirt
see,
on
see, got a whole,
with
see,
a
see,
striped got, short sleeve see, green kind of Beach Boys-esque
right,
60s dress
see,
shirt.
But I've got, I'm also wearing green shorts.
Oh, I
thought I
notice.
Decided I am going to be, I'm actually, my wife, God bless her, passed away a bit ago. I always dress the way she didn't want me to dress. And I thought today I'm going to dress and be color coordinated in her memory. Thank you, Penny. You're still there, always looking at my clothing.
Well, the green theme goes with this recipe because we're talking about watermelon
which
pizza.
Which is green.
What's,
which is
yeah,
green.
What's watermelon
which
pizza?
Is green. Which is green. Do you like watermelon?
I do. Sure.
I love watermelon.
Yeah,
you know
love...
what I really like? Seedless watermelon.
That was a
I
good
mean, well,
advancement
our children
technology.
Will not, my grandchildren will never know that watermelon had those big seeds.
Yeah.
Remember?
Oh, yeah. I used to just spit
I mean,
them
now,
out.
I mean, I don't even think about seeds when I get watermelon.
Yep.
So this is watermelon pizza. Now, seems kind of odd, like pizza, watermelon.
Can you describe it
you
for our listeners
it,
if they don't know
it?
What it is? Yeah, what does it look like?
I mean, well, it looks like pizza because it's circular,
okay.
But you don't put it in the oven.
Right. Watermelon
right.
in the oven isn't
watermelon
probably not a good thing.
Watermelon in the oven does not work. All right, let's make it. Watermelon pizza. Now, you know what a pizza looks like, right?
Oh, sure.
It's round, it's circular. You want to slice a watermelon 1 inch thick,
okay.
Like a slice, so it looks like a pizza,
okay,
right?
Right.
Looks like a little pizza.
Yeah.
Not a big pizza. So you're going to start out with one slice. That's it.
Okay.
And it's about 1 inch thick. You need 1 ounce of crumbled feta cheese.
Okay.
You get a little container. 5 to 6 Kalamata olives, nice and sliced.
Yep.
A teaspoon of mint leaves. Do you grow mint leaves around your house?
I don't, but my 6-year-old daughter has a little herb garden, and she
nice.
Has mint and basil,
nice.
And she loves it. Yep.
Wonderful. And 6 sprigs of basil, fresh basil,
speaking
which is
of
wonderful.
Basil, yeah.
And 1/2 tablespoon full of balsamic glaze.
All right, a half big tea balsamic glaze.
Okay. So you're going to start out with that nice circular piece of watermelon that looks like a pizza. You're going to divide it up just like you would a pizza, okay? You're going to divide it up.
Sure.
Then on each of those nice little triangles, you're going to take some of the feta, you're going to take some of the olives, you're going to take some of the mint leaves, you're going to take some of the basil, and then you're going to take the tablespoonful of balsamic glaze and kind of move it all around, and you've got a watermelon pizza.
It sounds
That's
really
it.
Interesting.
It's very simple.
Yeah.
And of course, obviously, if you're going to take this on a picnic, you're going to slice up the whole watermelon.
Sure, you're not going to throw it away.
No, but here you've got the juiciness of watermelon,
mm-hmm.
the sweetness of watermelon, the taste of feta, you can just picture it, the salt in the olives, because
mm-hmm.
it's salt, and you've got balsamic glaze. I mean, you can almost smell
it sounds
how
good.
This pizza. There's one thing you don't want to do with this pizza, and do you know what that is?
What's that?
Put it in the oven.
Okay.
This is not an oven-baked pizza.
All right.
So do not put it in the oven.
We won't do that.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, which is very simple, go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Or, of course, through Facebook. And remember, do not put it in the oven.
You cannot stress that enough. Do not put it in the oven. 800-462-7413. That's 800.
It's a non-oven-baked pizza.
That's right. 800-462-7413. All right, let's try to help out a caller now in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, sure.
My name is Donna, and I just have a question about soft tissue gout.
Soft tissue gout. Okay,
yeah.
So tell me what you mean by that. You mean where you have something called a typhus? But you have gout. You have gout or you don't have gout?
Well, they told me I had soft tissue gout, which was different than regular gout.
Okay.
And my thumb
mm-hmm.
and my palm
uh-huh.
and on my elbow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have this.
My elbow's sore because it's my elbow.
So first of all, gout is a metabolic problem where we don't get rid of uric acid in our body and it builds up. And when it builds up in the skin, in the soft tissue, you can have these bumps called tophus, T-O-P-H-U-S. Tophi is, and that's what you're feeling. That's what actually is going on in your body. That doesn't mean you don't have gout in your joints, but it means you definitely have it in your skin. It's deposited in the skin, and that's it. How did they make the diagnosis? Did you go in because you had lumps in your skin, or what your doctor?
No, I showed my regular doctor
mm-hmm.
these bumps that I have. And my elbow is the only one that's really sore, but he says, I don't know what that is.
Okay.
So she said, ask your dermatologist. And I said, okay. So I asked her, and she goes, huh, never saw that before. And I went, oh, great. So this was more than a year ago.
Okay.
But they finally sent me to orthopedic specialist.
Okay.
And he took an x-ray of my elbow and hand. And he comes back and he says, you have soft tissue gout.
So you've got gout. In other words, they looked at that and said, after they imaged it, they said, this is uric acid. So where's the pain that you have in your joints?
Like my spine, my knees, my hips.
Okay, knees and
my hands.
Okay, in your hands. And did they put you on any medications at all? So they didn't put you on any, allopurinol, which is a drug that we normally give to get rid of uric acid in the body. So they didn't put you on anything at all.
No, he said, well, we can cut them out, but then they'll come back, though.
Well, I don't think I would cut them out, first of all, unless they're okay. Bothersome. But what we usually do is we try to reduce uric acid in the body. And in some cases, those tophi, you know, those lumps will disappear. And did anyone check you? Did they do a blood test for uric acid?
No.
So they never checked you to see if your uric acid is high?
Not that I know of.
Well, you would know of it because you're the ones who would have the blood test.
Well, I get blood tests annually.
No, this would be a very specific test. It wouldn't be on a commonly used blood test.
No.
I have a couple of suggestions for you, and I think it's important. First of all, call back your primary doctor and say, hey, it looked to me, I talked to this doc on the radio, and I've got, quote, soft tissue gout. I want a uric acid test. You really do have to have a uric acid test. That's what you have to do. And then if your uric acid is elevated, which it undoubtedly is, I would be sort of surprised if it was not elevated, because if it wasn't elevated, I would then question the diagnosis. Because you don't really make a definitive diagnosis of whether or not these are gouty uric acid deposits without taking a needle in and pulling some of the fluid out. And not that you need to have that done, but the x-ray is not a definitive diagnosis. It's a probable diagnosis. But you need a uric acid test. And then if your uric acid is elevated, which it probably is, you need to be on a drug like allopurinol to reduce the uric acid in your body. And the reason is you're more likely to get gout in your joints that eventually is going to bother you, either be painful or be destructive. But you definitely need a uric acid test. And if you do have elevated uric acid above the number, really above 6, it used to be 8. Used to be 8 that we found acceptable, and now the number is closer to 6. If you do have an elevated uric acid, you got to be on some medication for that. Because eventually, over time, you might get more joint pain. And some of your joint pain that you have in your body might be from gout. So uric acid, and then you need to get treatment. And if your doctor is not sure what to do, you need to see a rheumatologist. Okay?
Awesome. Wow, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
It was so helpful.
Thanks. Thanks for your call.
Now I know something.
Thanks so much for your call, and glad that we could help. That's what we try to do in this show. Pretty much every time that we're here, we try to help people. And then because you discussed this, there are other people around the country who are listening to what you have to say. And so when you called on the show, you're actually helping other people. So thank you so much for calling.
Well, thank you, Doctor and Carol. Thank you.
Oh, I got to thank them. Yeah, you're welcome. I did nothing. I did nothing here.
You take care.
Answer my call.
You take care now.
Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Call anytime and leave us a voicemail if you'd like. Let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Florida.
Good morning. I have a fungus on my left big toe, and I've tried many treatments, even went to my primary doctor, but I still cannot get rid of this fungus. I've even went to as far as taking my toenail off. Could you please give me an answer? Thank you.
Well, there are a whole bunch of things that you can do for toenail fungus. And you want to know something? none of them are 100% effective. that's something.
Of course.
So first of all, there's a drug, Lamisil, L-A-M-I-S-I-L. It is now a generic drug. Terfenadine, I think that's the name. I can't quite remember the generic name. But Lamisil, 250 milligrams a day, once a day for 12 weeks. Try it, see if it works. If it fails, you go through another cycle and try it. It, by the way, it takes, after you take that, it can take up to 6 months for that nail to become completely normal. The toenail grows very slowly. And I don't think anyone has explained why. I always heard, well, it grows slower because it's far away from your heart, just like
it grows slower than your fingernails.
It grows toenails much slower too? Than your okay. fingernails. How often do you cut your fingernails?
As often as I buy vitamins, I guess.
No, it grows much slower than your fingernails, but it grows slower. It's a bigger nail. I mean, the toenail is bigger. So if you generally within a month or two when you're taking it, this 12 weeks of Lamisil, you may start to notice the nail looks better, but it may fail. There's another medication called Penlac, P-E-N-L-A-C, and it's a, quote, varnish. In other words, it's a nail polish that has an antifungal in the nail polish itself, and that can also be very effective. Once again, 80% effective, nowhere near 100% effective, because that may work too. This gentleman took off his nail. That's effective, but unfortunately, the nail comes back, and it can look the same. And there is no absolute treatment for nail bed fungus that will work 100% of the time. And some people hate it enough so that they just go to a podiatrist and get the nail taken off. But in fact, you don't really have to do it. There's nothing. It's really more of a cosmetic issue. And it's more of an issue of a thickened nail is harder to cut. And one of the tricks for cutting a thickened nail like that is to soak your foot in water before you cut it, because that actually takes the keratin that's in the nail and makes it easier to cut. And that's why a lot of people, when they cut their toenails, do it after they're in the shower or in the bathtub, because it actually softens the nail. But you can try all those things. And then there are a whole bunch of remedies that you can find on the internet where you put everything from Mylanta, which is what you use for your stomach when you have stomach distress, to Bengay. Mm. I've seen Bengay, to mayonnaise. People have tried mayonnaise.
Okay.
To a bunch of other. You know, something. You know,
does aioli work for that,
you know,
too?
Carol, I got to tell you something. Obviously, you do not have a toenail fungus. So you've never looked at it. Anyway, that's the answer is you may not get a good answer to this, but I would try the Lamisil and then I would try Penlac.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, it's time to let one of our listeners give us a piece of their mind. It's your favorite segment, Zorba. This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh.
All right, Zorba, we received several emails about this infraction. The first one comes from Michael in Wisconsin Rapids, who writes, "Hello, Dr. Pastor. First off, I love your show. However, I winced when you said the phrase, commit suicide. Now, don't feel bad. We all do it. I still catch myself. While this may be controversial for many people, I don't believe taking one's own life is a crime. These folks, veterans or otherwise, are obviously trying to alleviate pain. Let's reserve the verb commit for actual crimes. Thank you and kindest regards."
You know, I don't know from a point of view of, it's not a grammar point of view.
No.
You know, when somebody has committed suicide, because we say that, I don't know another substitute word that I would use.
Let me read one more. How about this?
Okay.
Good you brought that up. Mm-hmm. This is Sandy in Madison, Wisconsin, who concurs and says, "Dr. Zorba, I love your show, and I'm very happy that you're talking about suicide, but please eliminate the word commit in relation to suicide. Commit implies blame or a wrongful act, like committed murder or adultery. Quote, died by suicide or cause of death was suicide is much better. Thank you."
So died by suicide is a more, I see what they're talking about. Died by suicide. I never thought about committed suicide.
I think of it as a phrase.
Mm-hmm. And died by suicide would be a more neutral phrase. Okay,
That's good feedback, isn't it?
That's very good feedback.
Yeah,
died by suicide does not have the same thing.
It's hard to change that because think of all the years you've said commit suicide.
Well, also language changes
and
how we do things.
Yeah.
And so there are words that we use now you know, that we would not use before.
Of course.
You know, somebody helped me. And I wanted to write something that I realized when I wrote, when I was going to write it, mm-hmm. was actually a sexist comment, you know, that I would say, thanks for doing this, you're a doll. That was a phrase that was commonly used when I was younger by my mom and my dad, you're a doll for doing this. And then I thought to myself, I don't think that's really the right thing to say, which I didn't do. And I looked it up, and you're a doll is a pejorative term.
Sure.
You're a doll for doing it. But it was not a pejorative term back in the 50s or 60s, or maybe it was a pejorative term, but I just wasn't aware of it, you know, because mm-hmm. there are terms that we use that are incorrect, and you're not aware that you're insulting somebody. Died by suicide versus committed suicide. I think that's a much better way to say it. I will take that more than under consideration. I will try to do that.
Very good. Do you disagree with the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right. We have more of the show coming up, more emails, more of your voicemails, and another healthy living topic to discuss. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor
on your health.
Carl Christensen in the studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. He's right over there across the desk from me. He's wearing his great green outfit. He's looking great. Oh, I forgot to mention he's got a really nice burnt sienna colored hat, baseball hat on that says Red Rock Canyon, Las Vegas, Nevada.
That's right. Should have had a green hat on.
So that would be totally been too much green, I feel
be
like.
Too much
that
green. Would,
yeah, overdo
it's
it.
Not even St. Patty's Day.
No, so. It's not. Number to call anytime if you have a healthy living question is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But before we get back to the call, Zorba, let's talk about our healthy living topic number two, vaping. New info on vaping.
Yeah. And, you know, vaping is a big issue. I find it a big issue, especially with kids. I don't want children, young adults and children, middle school, high school, to start vaping because it may be that they're leading to a lifetime of vaping. So I'm really very much against this. The feds did not do the right things by basically, you know, getting this under control earlier on. And right now we're seeing an explosion in vaping. But mm-hmm. what's important now, especially among young adults, is we're seeing an explosion in vaping on a regular basis since disposable vaping pens have become available. So this particular study looked at England, last 2 years ago to see whether or not young adults were vaping, and they found there was an explosion in vaping, many, many more people vaping. Now, it was basically 1.3% at the beginning of the study in 2013. Okay, so only 1.3% of adolescents vaped on a regular basis. In 2023, it was up to 10%.
Quite
so 10% were vaping on a regular basis. A lot of them long-term vapors. You know, friend, this was defined as people were vaping on a regular basis for more than 3 to 6 months. And the fact is, we don't know what vaping does in the long run. You know, we know, for instance, that I think it is safer than cigarette smoking. I think that tobacco is probably one of the worst things you can possibly, you know, combustible tobacco we know causes heart disease, causes stroke, causes lung cancer. But we really don't know what vaping does over a 20-year period. And if you look at in this country, up to 23% of 18-year-olds are now vaping at least intermittently or on a regular basis in this country. And a number of them never smoked before, but they started vaping. So there's a whole social cultural issue here that we have to begin to get our hands on. And once disposable vapes came out, people started using it. So now, do you know anyone who vapes?
A few people. And from what I remember was a lot of people would try to use vaping as a way to quit cigarettes.
To quit cigarettes, right.
But now you're
right.
saying a lot of people just start with vaping right away.
Right, that's exactly it.
That's so they're not using it
to quit. Right, and I think using it to quit cigarettes is really a very useful use for vaping. But I think it's important for parents parents to talk to their teenagers about vaping and the dangers of vaping, because no matter how it looks, the teens don't pay attention to their parents. Study after study after study has shown that teens really do pay attention to parents, what they do and what they say. And of course, what they do is much more important than what they say. So you've got kids at home or adolescents, talk to them about vaping and the fact that vaping is not innocuous. It can cause problems, and we don't know what they are 20 years down the line.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to the phones now. Let's try to help out a caller in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
My name is Amy, and I am in the throes of menopause. I'm 50 years old, and a bit of a homeopath nature, you know, kind of, how do I say, a naturopath. I'm an herbalist, and I have a history of these types of things. And so I have been struggling. There's so much in the United States about how to medicate for menopause. So Dr. Zorba, my big question for you is, what types of homeopathic means do you have for ameliorating or reducing just the life change for we women who don't want to jump on the bandwagon of Western medicine?
Right, exactly. And there really is no good Western medicine for menopause. You know, for many years, of course, we gave estrogen. We thought, well, that was, you know, that was the best thing to give. And then we discovered, of course, it had side effects. You know, the risk of breast cancer and other side effects from it. We thought it was very useful. So, you know, we have other drugs that can help. Antidepressants in certain amounts can help with the symptoms. But we don't have really good drugs that are innocuous and don't have side effects. What do you give? Are you, when you said you're an herbalist, you mean you actually, there are herbs that you give? You're a professional herbalist or that's just...
Oh, no, pedestrian at best.
Pedestrian herbalist.
No, I've studied herbs and I've lived in Asia, and so I receive training. I travel for work, and so when I travel, I'm a traveling chef. And so in so doing, you know, in working with food and with herbs and spices and things, you just kind of, and I'm a yogi and things like that. So I'm definitely more Eastern minded, you know. And so I have friends in the East who do lots of other things like arnica and sweet potatoes, you know, Mexican sweet potatoes, Mexican yams. But I don't know. I've just been having difficulty finding. I was even vegan for 18 months trying to reduce symptoms. I don't really have hot flashes or anything like that.
What's the main thing that you have now?
The red mist and irritability, and I don't have depression, but I have the insomnia is wretched. You know, and people in my family and people who care about me think have tried to ask me if I have bipolar disorder or multiple personality disorder. And I said, no, I'm just in the change.
No, you've been in the change.
And I refuse to medicate, you know, so I receive therapy. So I know it's not that, you know, I know that I don't have bipolar disorder or any. I studied psychology, so I'm sure.
So you know? a couple of thoughts. So first of all, one of the reasons, by the way, yams was consistently used is that's where the concept of progesterone. Yams have a certain amount of phytoestrogens that are similar to estrogen, and that's where Mexican yams and yams came into being. But you may try, for instance, Tibetan medicine. If you've not tried or gone to a Tibetan healer, there's some forms of Tibetan medicine that seem to be somewhat effective for menopause. So I would look towards Tibetan medicine, which is manufactured. It's manufactured. Some of it is manufactured in India. Some of it is manufactured in this country. I would try that. That's number one. Then I would also look at acupuncture. If you haven't tried 10 courses of acupuncture to see whether or not that would make it, you have. Because a change in chi in that internal energy can make it, you know, can make a difference with that. Those are things. And then the other aspect, as you said, with a yogi, is looking towards things such as Zen meditation or some sort of, you know, mindfulness meditation. Because what's happening is your body is now going through a change. And that change, unfortunately, for some women can last for only a month or two, and for other women can last for years at a time. When you look at it, it can last for a long time where it sort of comes and goes. And why is this? Because here it is on one part of your body is saying, estrogen receptors are saying, I need to have the estrogen here. And the other part of your body is saying, hey, we're done with estrogen. You're finished with that part. And you're looking at a conflict, really, between two parts of your body.
All the research I've done exactly concurs with everything you've said, and it's good to have that reassurance. I have done acupuncture 10 cycles, you say?
Mm-hmm.
What specifically should I ask? I just relocated, too, from one area where I had a phenomenal acupuncturist, and just, she's such a great healer. And I can't commute 4 hours to go see her.
No, she's so good, I've considered it. No, when you go to a different town, the issue is, how do you find the right practitioner? And that's really hard. So you've got to find somebody who you trust, who may know of somebody, or they trust somebody else who can give you a recommendation. That's kind of the way to find that, because between acupuncture, Tibetan medicine, an herbalist, and a homeopath, you might find the right way to do things. Now, I do want to mention, you know, like you said, you may not have manic depression, but sometimes low-dose antidepressants such as Cymbalta, duloxetine. So duloxetine is a very different antidepressant. It's called an SNRI, not an SSRI, but an SNRI.
Awesome.
It's used for chronic pain, and sometimes the tiniest dose of duloxetine, we're talking about 30 milligrams, can make a difference to take an edge off of it while you're doing the other things, not on a permanent basis. So you may want to consider that, but I would go through all the alternative things first. And they're not really alternatives. They're really other ways to treat it in a more natural way versus using Western medicine on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Awesome. So you recommend Cymbalta and duloxetine, which is an SNRI.
That's right. It's an SNRI, Cymbalta, in a low dose, 30 milligrams. Take it at bedtime. It helps a lot of people sleep. The interesting thing about Cymbalta is the name brand, is that it's been shown to work for arthritis in people who are not depressed. In other words, even though it is an antidepressant, it is used in chronic pain. And so it also has some other aspects in that it can be very useful for people who are going through menopause. And you might look at it not as a permanent basis, but as a cycle for maybe either 6 weeks to 6 months to sort of tamp down those estrogen receptors, then go off of it and see what happens.
Right. Our bodies have been doing this for half of our lives. I just look at it as a change. Right. It's not a death sentence at all of these.
Oh, no. Like it is not a death sentence at all. No, not at all. Not at all.
It's just a course of change. It's life, right? So I'm trying to tone down the negative dogma around estrogen or around menopause in general.
Oh, totally.
And how estrogen, I loved how you talked about the phytoestrogens in natural plants. Duh.
Right. You got it.
That's what I'm trying to do.
You got it. Exactly.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Zorba. I appreciate your answers.
Thank you. Thank you much. Thank you for your call, and thanks for sharing that with people.
Absolutely. We need to educate everybody and just normalize it.
We do.
Right?
You hit it right on the head. We do. So
Thanks a lot.
You take care now. Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. This one's from a listener in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin.
I would like to know if the water aerobics classes that I do during the week count toward my 10,000 steps. Thank you.
Well, it's interesting. First of all, you do water aerobics during the week. That's what you want. You want exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Does it count towards steps? Yeah, it kind of does. But the only reason we use steps and the number 10,000, which is just a made-up number, arbitrary number, mm-hmm. 4 to 5,000 are probably enough, is it gives us an idea of what we're doing and whether or not we're moving our body. Yes, water aerobics counts as exercise. And if you want to use 10,000 steps as your moniker, yes. Now, can I translate that into steps? Not exactly. But you know what? It's got to be worth you doing a water aerobics class. It's got to be worth at least 5,000 steps.
Yeah, what's an underwater step versus step? Is there a calculation algorithm there?
A step algorithm. Yeah. That's what we need.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we punch out today, Zorba, we love when our listeners contribute their healthy living tips to the show. The following email came from Sebastian in Toronto, Canadian here. Dr. Zorba, I'm a longtime listener up here in the Toronto area. Thanks for all the information and humor. I was listening to your recent discussion of popcorn. Years ago, I had a terrible experience with a microwavable popcorn bag. Something caused the bag itself to burn, and the fumes it created permeated all the popcorn and the microwave. It was nauseating.
Terrible.
Yeah, that sounds rough. Since then, I prepare popcorn by putting a third cup of popping kernels in an old-fashioned paper sandwich bag, rolling the open end down loosely three or four times, putting the bag flattest side down, and setting the microwave on high for 2 minutes.
Oh.
Then I watch and listen, removing the bag when the popping slows down after its peak, and the bag is obviously filled with popped corn.
Neat.
The great thing about this method is it uses no oil, and if you overcook it slightly, you can remove the burned popcorn, and the rest of it's fine.
Oh.
And there's no sickening, nauseating smell.
How nice is that?
That's a good popcorn tip.
I'm so glad. That is a good popcorn
tip. Canadian popcorn tip.
Yeah, it is the Canadian
popcorn. They know how to do things up there.
They do. That's right. They know how to make popcorn in Toronto. I love it. It's an air pop popcorn.
I might try that, yeah.
That's basically
no
what
oil.
Do you like popcorn?
I love popcorn.
Yeah,
who doesn't like popcorn?
Exactly that.
Someone doesn't.
Somebody doesn't like popcorn. They don't have to let us know. No. Write us. That's right. If you don't like popcorn.
Do you have a kernel of knowledge to share with our lovely audience? Butter us up and maybe we'll read it on the air. That's too much. Just leave us a voicemail or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Should we do this again next week, Zorba?
I hope so.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org. Or, of course, you can find us through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us
anytime.
You beat me to it there. Anytime. At 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg.
Yay! Go, Brad!
Go, Brad! Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.
From WPR.